Blog Talk Radio.
Special technique. Special technique of shadow boxing.
What's going on? You are listening to the Boxing Source Radio Show here on Sunday, November 13, 2016. I am your host, James Bell, lead boxing analyst, the cohort Truth on Sports, and weekly blogger on the cohort Truth on Sports website through the chtonsports.com. That is the chtonsports.com. Number to dial in to talk boxing is 347-237-5539. Once again, 347-237-5539. Press the one key to get on cue. You'll be able to talk live on the show. We will be getting into what was going on over the past weekend here in the sport of boxing. But before we get into that, we will get into a few commercials here. Once we do that, we'll be able to talk boxing. You're listening to the Boxing Source Radio Show here on the MRN Broadcasting Channel on Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, all this is Matt Yulong with the Cold Hard Truth on Sports and the Triangle Offense. I just wanted to take some time to tell you about Pest Bear, a wonderful company. They've been around for 20-plus years. They have over 11 branches in Florida, great licensed, certified specialists, and guess what? They do more than pest control. They also take care of termites, as well as lawn care, sprinkler systems, and much, much more. Call today, 1-800-PESTBEAR. That's 1-800-737-8232.
WCSB Sports and MRN Broadcasting, powered by blogtalkradio.com.
Football talk like you've never heard it before. Possibly one of the funniest podcasts in sports today. That's right, the CMT Firestorm Football Talk Show every Wednesday night at 8:30 p.m. right here on Blog Talk Radio. We have Cali Mike, Chi-Town, Carcel Mathis, and the Mouth of the South, Tony Watley. They give you a different perspective of football that may not be found anywhere else. You may also catch the callers with some classic lines as well.
There's a blackout level.
What is it?
I don't know. I don't know exactly what it is off the top of my head.
Okay, I know you're in front of your computer right now. Look it up.
I'm about to look it up right now, all right?
National blackout level.
I never said national blackout level, liar.
Yes, you did.
No, I didn't.
Okay, Florida blackout level. Whatever blackout level you want to look up, look it up. I'll wait.
You can't compare a fifth-year quarterback to a 20-year quarterback. How do you compare Cam Newton to Peyton Manning? That's impossible.
I don't even think Cam Newton's going to get a contract extension.
Tampa Bay Buccaneers are the worst franchise in the National Football League. The worst franchise in the National Football League.
The difference between Jameis Winston, Matt Ryan, and Cam Newton is Jameis Winston has the ability to lead a team to a championship.
Once again, people, the CMT Firestorm Football Talk Show every Wednesday night on the MRN Broadcasting Network.
Jameis Winston is just stupid.
Smartest mind, smartest mind, whose world is this?
Sorry, we are back here live on the Boxing Source Radio Show here on the MRN Broadcasting Show on Blog Talk Radio. Number to dial in, 347-237-5539. Once again, that is 347-237-5539. Press the 1 key to get on queue, and you'll be able to talk in live on the show. Pretty much a fairly busy weekend in the sport of boxing. We had a few fight cards going on here on Saturday. We had the WBC welterweight champion in action, and basically an exhibition fight in his hometown of Philadelphia. Remember they were talking about Danny Garcia facing the number two contender in Andre Berto sometime in December. In September. But that apparently did not take place. So Danny Garcia was sitting around looking for a fight. Didn't necessarily have to be for the WBC title. He was able to fight Samuel Vargas in his hometown of Philadelphia. They were able to get that fight put together. We all know that there was a announcement that Danny Garcia, who is the WBC champion, was going to fight Keith Thurman, who is the WBA champion. Those plans were for next year. They put it in for March 4th, but before that, he was able to fight Samuel Vargas in Philadelphia. Samuel Vargas as the number 6 contender within the WBA. And hold on, I just got basically frozen in time here because, while I'm doing this show, I'm watching the end of the Dallas-Pittsburgh game, and I'm a Dallas Cowboys fan, and I just saw Ezekiel Elliott run down the middle right on them Pittsburgh boys for a touchdown. And to get the lead back here with, just under 10 seconds to go. So I'm like really excited right now because Pittsburgh Steelers pretty much thought that they could win this game, but they just let that hole in the middle be wide open for Ezekiel Elliott to run right through there. So right now, I'm excited. Well, yeah. Oh, yeah, that's right. All right. So let's get back into it. All right. So like I was saying there, we had the Danny Garcia going up against Samuel Vargas in Philadelphia, and a lot of people, saw this as a mismatch, and it pretty much was. Danny Garcia was basically in there to get some rounds in, and he was pretty much scoring a lot, from the opening bell. The right hand was scoring a lot on Samuel Vargas. And it didn't look like Samuel Vargas really had, much of an effect, on Danny Garcia there. Some know Samuel Vargas as, one of the guys that did fight Errol Spence at one point earlier in his career, but this fight here against Danny Garcia was pretty much another showcase fight for him. I mean, when he fought Errol Spence, that was like, you know, back in April of 2015. He's had a good number of fights after that. Actually, he had five fights in Canada up until that point, so, with five wins there before fighting Danny Garcia. So he was able to get to that ranking in the WBA by winning those five fights. And so he was, you know, up there against Danny Garcia. you know, but, I mean, Danny Garcia was pretty much battering Vargas, you know, all the way through to the seventh round. And, you know, now once he basically was able to, Garcia was able to put on the pressure there in the seventh round. Within 2 minutes and 17 seconds into the seventh round, Gary Rosado was came in, stepped inside there, and stopped the fight. So Danny Garcia was able to stay undefeated there with 33 wins, scoring his 19th knockout victory. And he retains, well, he didn't necessarily retain the WBC welterweight title. he hasn't even defended it. So with Sam Vargas not being in the WBC rankings, Danny Garcia wasn't able to defend the WBC title. So he does go to 33-0 with 19 KOs, and Samuel Vargas falls to 25-3. Falls to 25-3, and Danny Garcia pretty much has a clear path now, you know, to prepare for the unification match between him and Keith Thurman, the WBA champion. Both guys undefeated, both with, you know, few key wins. Danny Garcia with a lot more higher profile fights than Keith Thurman. Of course, he, you know, won the WBC belt earlier this year against Robert the Ghost Guerrero. He, you know, won his first fight at full welterweight against Paul Malignaggi. He got the majority decision win against Lamar Pearson, got the decision win against Lucas Matisse, won a very tough fight against Ab Judah, got the TKO win against Tamir Khan, had a couple of fights against Eric Morales, and defeated Nick Campbell, among others. You know, Keith Thurman, he did have his big win over Sean Porter earlier this year. He's also fought Robert Guerrero for the WBA title, fought Diego Chavez, Julio Diaz, and the like. So this is pretty much the big fight here, you know, for the number one spot in welterweight division. So I'm kind of looking forward to that. Have a caller in here, area code 205. What's going on with you?
What's going on, John? This is Mike Grady, man. How you doing?
Doing pretty good. May say I'm doing a little bit better because just saw the Dallas Cowboys win this game against Pittsburgh Steelers.
Yeah. I just finished up. That's why I called in. It went off. So.
Yeah,
but, you know, the process is very rough for me, man. I just want to. It's just tough boxing.
Gotcha. Yeah. I understand that. So I would advise that you don't listen in to our sister show on Wednesday night or Tuesday as we may go over what happened in football. So let's get into boxing here. Like I was saying, getting into that little thing with the fight that happened between Danny Garcia and Samuel Vargas, as Danny Garcia was able to get a TKO win in the seventh round. Moving into, you know, keeping Danny Garcia's undefeated record there at 33 wins, and scoring the 19th knockout of his career against Samuel Vargas. I pretty much said it was a mismatch from the get-go. And all it was basically a tune-up fight between, you know, tune-up fight until March 4th when he goes up against Keith Thurman. So I don't know. What did you think about Danny Garcia and how he, you know, performed in this particular fight?
So I actually haven't watched the fight yet. I saw that he got the TKO win, and I was pretty much going to ask you a few questions about what you thought about it. Was it a Rod Salka type fight?
I don't necessarily say it was like a Rod Salka fight. Kind of, I mean, I kind of like give Senior Vargas a little bit more credit than that. I don't think it was like an overwhelming mismatch like, you know, his, you know, match against Rod Salka. Salka was just, you know, a complete mismatch because, you know, Salka basically was floating around, you know, lightweight, or, you know, super lightweight. So you're getting somebody that's at lightweight and then going up to fight Danny Garcia there while, you know, he was, you know, Garcia was pretty much on the brink of going up to welterweight. Man, that was like an absolute mismatch there. But here with Daniel Vargas, and at least with Vargas, they, you know, had him going up the ranks within the WBA there for welterweight. So I wouldn't say it was a Rod Salka level type of fight.
So was there anything that Garcia, even though he knocked the guy out, did he, Rod Salka obviously was not a mover, obviously.
Yeah, Rod Salka wasn't much of a mover. I mean, you could probably say that Vargas had some type of movement, but not, you know, overly big enough, you know, to, you know, not big enough to say that he was a, to give him, you know, lots of trouble, to give Danny Garcia a lot of trouble. So I didn't really necessarily see that this would be a dangerous fight for Danny Garcia at any point.
Well, glad he won, so the Keith Thurman fight can go all about the hit, hopefully, crossing fingers.
Yeah, I'm just hoping that it can, you know, go through here in March because, you know, last Thurman fight, that one was originally scheduled to be March, and, you know, that didn't necessarily happen there, so it had to be postponed a bit. And it still ended up being a very good fight between, you know, Thurman and Porter. And that was going to happen regardless. So I'm looking for that to, you know, happen here as well, between Danny Garcia here and Keith Thurman. Just going into the, you know, the potential matchup between those two, I mean, they pretty much already, you know, got it started there between them a little bit. So I'm going to see if I can get into that here real quick. Hold on a sec.
Your next opponent, Keith one-time Thurman. What do you have to say to him? He's right here. Hey, Philly, hold up, Philly. If y'all want to see me whip this guy's ass, make some noise. Now, Keith, what you said in the booth was he's landing. He looks great, but he's not in there against me, against Keith one-time Thurman. You stand behind that? All day, every day, baby. You know, I'm a different caliber. I'm not no chair. I ain't no easy peasy, boy. All right? Oh, yeah? Prove it, baby. You don't want to miss this March 4th. Danny Garcia versus Keith one-time Thurman, ladies and gentlemen. You know, fuck your Australia.
Well, it seems like they're trying to get it started up here with the trash talk between those two, which, you know, I don't think it would be, you know, that much of an issue. You know that Keith Thurman has a lot of mouth. And, you know, while Dede Garcia may not, you know, talk, if he doesn't talk as much, then you get, you know, his father, Angel Garcia, right there that'll, you know, pick up the slack for it. So you got, like, a good amount of months for this fight to build up. And, you know, for it to take place. My question is, you know, will they have this at a somewhat neutral site? I don't think that a neutral site would be Barclays Center. Barclays, to be, I mean, it's not that much for, you know, people from Philadelphia to make that 2-hour drive on I-95 to fill up the Barclays Center to, you know, have Garcia fans fully support that. But, you know, I'm kind of concerned as to, you know, how many overall supporters will be there. I mean, this particular fight here between Danny Garcia and Samuel Vargas was in the Leah Carras Center, and I don't necessarily know where that particular venue is. And while you did have Keith Thurman go up against Sean Porter, you know, at the Barclays Center, I kind of doubt that, you know, Thurman would probably have another fight there at Barclays. I mean, it might, you know, help business-wise for all parties involved, but here against Danny Garcia, I'm not necessarily sure Thurman would be completely down for that venue to be it. So, Mike, what do you think about this fight and the potential location that it could be at?
Well, I think that whatever location they make, they should maximize on the projection of fans coming. So if 2-hour drive from Philly to Madison Square Garden, then that would possibly be the most fans coming. I don't know, though. You know, like, if it was in Vegas, will people travel? Will people go to it? You know, like, I think that they should have it at a spot that they know that they get the most fanfare at the gate. You know, people going to watch it. It's going to be on free TV. Like, they'll get the rating. But as far as, you know, numbers and box office, I don't think Keith Thurman would be against that either. You know, going to a Madison Square Garden, even though it may be home field advantage for Danny Garcia, because you know you want to maximize, and I think that, you know, if the gate does very well, then that'll make a case for either one of them going forward. You know, when they do fight again, as far as the match, I think Keith Thurman is fight such that he molds his game to his particular opponent, and he'll pretty use movement to discourage Danny Garcia. And I don't think he'll stay still very long to get caught with Danny Garcia's, you know, pretty good left hook. You know, I don't think he'll stay still long enough to get caught with that. He'll move, he'll open shot, bang, he'll hit Garcia. And so I think we'll definitely see how good Garcia's chin is in this. We'll see how great it is. We'll see when he does slow down, how much will he has to the end of the fight, because I think Thurman is going to, you know, in the midst of his movement, people are not going to like that, but he's going to get some tee off on Danny.
Hmm.
And so the fact that Danny's not he ain't aggressive like Sean Porter, it's going to be, I think it's geared toward Thurman's favor, because it's kind of like tailor-made for Thurman. Thurman, all he got to do, and I think Thurman's taller too, right? All he got to do is just stick his arms out, moving, and just hit him with a two every time the two open, which the two should be open fairly easy, though, right, since he's left-handed.
Yeah, he could. Yeah, it could. While he's not taller than Danny Garcia, he does have a better reach. He does have somewhat of a reach advantage. So, So maybe he should still be able to use it because, while, you know, being a shorter fighter, he should still be able to use his mobility. Garcia, in comparison to Sean Porter is more of an aggressive style that will come forward and get at you, while Danny Garcia is a little bit slower. While he is more patient, he is a little bit slower. So one of the things that Keith Thurman can do in this fight in comparison to the fight that he had against Porter is that he should be able to get out to a good start. I think that Sean Porter was able to, you know, get a, you know, 1 or 2 round lead against against Keith Thurman because Thurman wasn't able to utilize the jab as much as Sean Porter was. But here, if he's, you know, able to be a little bit more aggressive, although still trying to maintain his mobility inside the ring, he should be able to, you know, get off a little bit faster against Danny Garcia. While Danny Garcia, you know, is more patient, he's still one that can get off a little bit slower. It's just that Keith Thurman has to be weary of, like you said, Garcia's left hook, and he does have a fairly good right hand. What I'm seeing here as far as, like, the consensus is in reference to Danny Garcia is that he does a lot of things well. They haven't really given Garcia that A-level fighter status yet, but they're definitely giving him a B-level status fighter with his, you know, amount of skills. It's not that he does anything great. He just does a lot of things very good.
And shit, he one thing you can't overlook Garcia that he finds a way to win. Some of his wins were questionable, you know, with the boxer type fighter, but you know, against the big fights, in the big fights, Danny Garcia definitely finds a way to win, and that's commendable. But I do believe in those big fights, the people who he got up for and pretty much showed us his skill level, they were limited. I think his biggest thing that he has going against him is that, Keith Thurman is versatile, man. He's a boxer puncher. He's a, you know, he can switch from boxer to puncher very quickly. And while that may not look pretty, he does it. Like, and he does it. Well, I gotta go back and look at the effectiveness of it. But, you know, like, and it's not like cute. It's not pretty. But shit, it happens, and people get hurt by that stuff. And he definitely wins around by doing it too.
Yeah, they do. And I think, you know, in a lot of the cases with Danny Garcia's fights and the big fights that he has, is that he kind of like gets to a point where his opponents discouraged a while, especially when it gets to the late rounds. They get discouraged once they're up in the ring there against Danny Garcia and not very successful with their game plan against them. So that's how, you know, he's able to pull up a lot of these against these well-known opponents, you know, with the exception of Lamont Peterson there. I pretty much thought that Peterson was the one that pulled out that particular fight. But Danny Garcia still, you know, came out there with the win, and, you know, now he's, you know, still undefeated going into 2017. So it's going to, you know, be a very pretty good matchup there, you know, between those two. And I'm kind of interested in seeing where this particular fight will end up. It's like a main event. You know, main event fight. It's a title unification fight. So I kind of favor a Barclays Center or a, Madison Square Garden as a venue. I just would like to see, you know, what else they're going to do as far as, like, putting in something in the undercard. I did, you know, hear that Eric Spence would be eager to figure winner between those two. But in the meantime, with that, Errol Spence Jr.
Okay.
Yeah, Errol Spence Jr. But we did also receive news over the week that the current IBF welterweight champion, Kell Brook, recently announced that he is not deciding to move up to junior middleweight, which is 154 pounds, and he's intending to defend the belt there against the number one contender, Errol Spence. In the next course of a few months or so, he will be defending the IBF belt against Errol Spence. And it's just a matter of when they get that fight put together. Hopefully they'll be able to negotiate a deal. It may be someplace overseas, there in the United Kingdom, if it's going to be in the O2 arena or anything like that. But try to see if they can get something done so it doesn't go to purse bid, because I've heard in this instance with the purse bid that Brooke would be getting 75% of the purse, while Errol Spence would be getting 25% if that goes to purse bid. So we'll be seeing here in the next few months how that negotiation gets put together and finalizes itself. All right, here we are within 30 minutes left in the live show. If y'all want to get in to Talk Boxing Live, the number is 347-237-5539. That is 347-237-5539. Press 1 key to get on cue. You'll be able to talk live on the show. We also had another main event on yesterday.
Can I make a comment on the last fight you talked about? Or Errol Spence, can I make a comment on that before you go on?
Oh, yeah. Oh, go ahead.
So, Errol Spence is definitely in the equation as far as a legitimate, contender. But I don't know the correct wording I want to use here. Only until he fights a Kell Brooks does he legitimately have a claim, in my opinion, to challenge the winner of Keith Thurman and Danny Garcia. Before that fight, unless he fights somebody on the same par as a Kell Brook or a Sean Porter, somebody like that, I don't think he has a rightful claim to say, I want to challenge one of you title holders. Yes, he's up there. Yes, he's in the equation, but I still think that he need the Kell Brook fight before everybody says that, yeah, y'all need to fight him because he legitimately deserves his shot. And so I'm trying to think of why I feel that way, because, with the Bundu fight, it let us know that he's in the equation, but I just feel like for the opportunity cost for them to fight him means that they got to fight still next quarter. And so I think only until he fights that Kell Brook championship belt-type fighter does he move from the prospect stage, the official prospect stage, into the official contender stage.
So,
what you think?
Here's what I have as far as I can do that. You talk about, Errol Spence has to, fight somebody like a Kell Brook level or anything like that to fight the likes of a Keith Thurman or a Danny Garcia or anything like that. Well, before Keith Thurman got up to where he was, who did he fight in order to get to where he is? You see what I'm saying? So,
well, he fought old champions. He fought Diaz. He fought
you talking about Karras? Like Karras and Chavez, maybe? Or Quintana?
Quintana, yeah. I mean, he fight older champions, yes. But he still fought who had, at one point, legitimate names, and who could beat maybe 60-50% of the people out there.
Well, I mean, at least, he's able to Well, yeah, there is that point in reference to Keith Everett facing those guys. But right now, in reference to Errol Spence, he's at the point where, or the timing that is, it's like there really isn't another fight out there that he needs to take that even, you know, that would even be valid before facing those guys. There's only, to me, there's only like one or two guys that he can fight right now other than those three major title holders. That is Andre Berto, Sean Porter, and maybe Lamont Peterson. And that's pretty much it. Other than that, there really isn't that much of a, you know, valid fighter out there for him to fight. That would it, otherwise, I mean, basically, that's like a waste of time for Errol Spence to do that. So unless if he fights somebody of the level of an Andre Berto or, you know, a Sean Porter, you know, that's pretty much on the, you know, brink of, you know, being one of the, still one of the top guys in the division or not, or, you know, a Lamont Peterson that's, you know, still out there looking for a fight. You know, he, I mean, since that fight that he had over in, you know, near Annandale, Virginia, he hasn't had anything else since then. So, I mean, that could have been a good potential matchup that could have been put together for Errol Spence. But other than that, I mean, he has this, all he has is this against Kell Brook, and that's pretty much it. And then after this Kell Brook fight, he's, if he's able to get past that, then, you know, what else is left for him? I mean, what are they going to do? See if they could, well, most likely, if Errol Spence does defeat Kell Brook, they may end up invoking that rematch clause against him, as, you know, there's nobody really below Errol Spence as far as like a, you know, a valid contender for the IBF welterweight title belt.
Yeah, and I definitely agree that these guys are on par of who he should be fighting right now. But I think only until he fights one of those guys that you mentioned does he legitimately have a claim to say, I claim and I, you know, have the right to fight you two title holders, undefeated title holders.
Oh.
Like, we know he can compete. We all know that. But mm-hmm. It's just like he just needs that next – he still ain't fought no B-minus fighter, something like that. Okay, maybe Algeria is a B-minus or C-plus.
Well, that's like the guys that I mentioned. He hasn't – you're saying that he hasn't fought those guys in the bench, the Andre Berto's and Lamont Peterson's. The Sean Porters.
I mean, he just needs to
fight
somebody.
I would say that's the fight that you would probably be looking for him to take before, you know, fighting a person on the level of Keith Thurman or Danny Garcia. But here's my take on that. In the welterweight division, I really don't see anybody that's an A or A plus level fighter yet. I don't see it. I see flaws in every welterweight that's out there. Everyone. So even though, you know, Spence hasn't really fought somebody of that level yet, it's after he fights somebody of that level yet, then what? Because he'd be right there on par with everybody else that's at the top of the division at that point.
Yeah, but all the people you name aren't A. They're in the B-ish range.
Right, right. And all the champions that are out there right now aren't at the A level yet. They're not.
You're right.
So,
but he still needs to fight
there it is.
Before he can legitimately say that he can claim a title from a B level fighter.
We'll have to wait and see on that. He's already, you know, built himself to become the IBF number one contender. So he'll face one of those B level fighters in Kell Brook. Later on in 2017. All right, so
yeah.
Let's get into this thing here with what happened in Monte Carlo early in Saturday afternoon our time when Luis Ortiz went up to fight Malik Scott. This fight here was kind of notable because it was the first fight card that Richard Schaefer was able to put together pretty much on his own. Of course, we all know Richard Schaefer as the pretty much right-hand man for Golden Boy Promotion for a long time. Was able to get a lot of good fights put together in over the course of, you know, many years or so. You know, we had a lot of fights within the welterweight division that happened. They had a lot of fights within the junior welterweight division that happened under Richard Schaefer. He was pretty much the lead guy in making the super fight between Floyd Mayweather and Saul Canelo Alvarez. And, you know, after that fight, pretty much things kind of got a little shaky between him and Oscar De La Hoya, and that pretty much carried over to the next year. And I think that they pretty much broke ties around sometime in 2014, at least by the end of 2014 there. So he was able to, you know, get himself built back up to get fight cards put together. Well, actually, I'll take all that back. That wasn't really under Richard Schaefer. Schaefer actually has a card coming on later this year. That's going to be in December, which will be the fight between Charlo and J-Rock Williams. That's going to be his fight card. That's what his first fight card is. This one here between Luis Ortiz and Malik Scott is notable because Luis Ortiz just signed with Eddie Hearn a match from boxing. Ortiz broke away from Golden Boy Promotion, so that's what all of that was. So kind of like mix all of that up right there. Still, you know, still all giddy about the Cowboys, man. So please excuse me on that. So yeah, so we got Luis King Kong Ortiz with this. I would say his second this year. I was able to see him live at the DC Armory on March 5th of this year against Tony Thompson, where he pretty much, you know, got an easy KO win against Tony Thompson. So now here against Malik Scott, he was pretty much, you know, favored by everybody to get this win against Malik Scott. And he pretty much, you know, kind of coasted to a unanimous decision win against Malik Scott. I really don't know what I could take out of this fight. It almost seemed like to Ortiz, it looked like almost like an exhibition fight. And, you know, one person that I follow on the boxing boards that is a member of the Transnational Boxing Rankings Board, he pretty much was saying that this was, you know, Ortiz kind of like sleepwalking through this fight. Kind of had lulls in between these fights and a lack of focus by Ortiz against Malik Scott. This was definitely not like his fight that he had almost a year ago against Brad Jennings, where it was almost looking like that was his best fight that he's had that I've seen, you know, on HBO, was his fight against Brian Jennings. He was able to use a lot of combinations, use a lot of punches to connect with an uppercut that he had. But here against Malik Scott, it did look like he was very motivated. And that kind of may hurt his stock a little bit because Eddie Hearn has, you know, big things ahead for Luis Ortiz. And so if he was able to, like, get, like, a quick work KO win against Malik Scott, they were potentially having him again as soon as 3 weeks later in the undercard for Anthony Joshua that's going to be coming up here in December. But I'm not necessarily sure if that's the case. So now you have Luis Ortiz here with the unanimous decision win against Malik Scott. stay undefeated there and stay as the current number one contender in the WBA rankings, with the WBA title still, you know, up for grabs, making with Tyson Fury basically out of the picture. So this is kind of interesting here, because you would think that Luis Ortiz could probably be in line to have a big fight, since the WBA title is kind of like vacated. You would think that they would be able to put something together between him and the number two contender for the WBA title. But that number two contender is Vladimir Klitschko, and they've been trying to match Vladimir Klitschko against Anthony Joshua. And so that particular fight between Ortiz and Klitschko may not be able to happen, because it seems like, you know, Eddie Hearn is trying to push the WBA to kind of award Klitschko the WBA belt and have a unification fight between him and Anthony Joshua sometime next year. So, first of all, I don't know if you were able to catch any highlights of this Ortiz-Lee Scott fight, but if so, give your thoughts on there, Mike. And if not, what's the overall perspective of Luis Ortiz going into 2022?
Yeah, so I only saw glimpses and pieces of the fight. And the pieces that I did see, you're right, there were lulls in the action. And, you know, yeah, at some point he had him hurt. And after he had him hurt, Malik Scott pretty much, so I'm going to use the generic things terms, he pretty much ran, pretty much, you know, kept moving.
We could clean it up a little bit. We could say he kind of survived.
Yeah, he survived. And so I think to be that point, it's tough for a fighter to knock out a fighter who's trying to survive, who's in survival mode, who pretty much says that continue moving and I'm not going to engage you, and I'm also not going to let you hit me. It's tough to knock that person out. But it's easy to, you know, easy and over that person. But I will say, before I say this with confidence, I need to go back and watch the fight fully. I'm going to ask you a question. I'm not going to make my statement. A fighter like Deontay Wilder, who knows how to use that style as far as moving, engage, move, whenever I want to engage, I engage. And, you know, yeah, Wilder has fought in that he could get hit when he does stop. But do you think that, and seeing the fight with Scott, who was trying to survive and move and stuff, because Scott got in a few punches in. I did see a couple times where he hit him, you know. But that could have been to Ortiz's unfocusedness, you know. But do you think a fighter like Wilder, who has that style where he moves and then engages with you, does that bode well? And how did Ortiz's win look going into the later rounds? Do you think Wilder moving, he has the advantage over Ortiz, and how did Ortiz's win look?
Well, to me, Wilder should, if he's able to use his length and reach, he should be able to give Ortiz, he would potentially be able to give Ortiz a tough fight, especially the Ortiz that I've seen in the last couple of fights against Tony Thompson and Malik Scott. The thing with Ortiz is that he's to me, he's actually more stationary and less mobile, or can be less mobile than Anthony Joshua is. To me, he's bigger. He's kind of like heavier set than Anthony Joshua is. Anthony Joshua is more of like a chiseled, you know, chiseled guy that's like tall and can still move. Ortiz, if you catch him on this bad day, he could be a little bit out of shape, and you could, if you have, you know, fleet of foot or at least a little bit mobile, you could jab him up and, you know, kind of jab him and keep jabbing him and having him reset, you know, time after time. So a person like Deontay Wilder, if he's able to fight a Luis Ortiz that is this type of Ortiz, then yeah, I would say he would be able to give Ortiz a lot of problems. But the thing is that if they give Ortiz a championship level fight, that's when, you know, we'll able to be see if Ortiz will be at the top of his game. But also, he has to be able to get these things fairly quickly because he is up there in age. I mean, you got, you know, Deontay Wilder out there at 31 years old. You got Anthony Joshua there at 27. You got Joseph Parker, who's going after the WBO championship at 24. And, you know, Ortiz is up there at 37 years old. I mean, he's, you know, not that far from where Roderick Klitschko is. So he's if he's going to be going after these major belts, he's going to have to get up there pretty much, pretty quick. Because he doesn't have that much time to lollygag around, and I think that's why he was able to sign up with Eddie Hearn, because with Eddie Hearn he has the potential to get, you know, a big fight there against Anthony Joshua, in the near future. So if he's able to do that, then he'll get that major title shot there. I'm seeing if I could check the rankings here. Not necessarily seeing him in the IBF rankings. Let me see I was trying to see if I could find where Malik Scott was, and I don't really see Malik Scott anywhere in these championship rankings either. So it almost looks like this was almost like an exhibition fight, even though like a WBA title was on the line. So that was, you know, that's fairly weird that, you know, they're able to do that. But we'll see what Eddie Hearn has in store for Luis Ortiz here in the near future. Because, I mean, they've been talking about a lot of potential matchups that they want to put him in. So it's a wait-and-see approach. Just under 10 minutes here in the live show. If you want to get in before overtime here, in that 347-237-5539. Once again, that is 347-237-5539. Keep the one key, and you'll be able to talk in live on the show. We've already, you know, went through the upcoming fight here between Andre Ward and Sergey Kovalev many times over. I don't think that, you know, it'll be doesn't have to really be discussed here that much. I'm just hoping that there'll be a way for me to catch the fight live, but there's like a lot of stuff going on in this area around that time, so that's going to be a very small chance. Right now, looking at, you know, other boxing news here, going through for now boxingscene.com, and I'm seeing here reference to Mike Grady's favorite fighter, Deontay Wilder, potentially may return to the ring sometime in March to go up against Huey Fury. Seeing here through boxing scene, Edward Shaykovsky says that Fury is currently in negotiations to fight Wilder in March. He was supposed to be in the October card that was going to have Tyson Fury rematch against Wladimir Klitschko, but of course that basically was trapped. But it seemed like here, let's see, trying to see where Huey is. Right now, I don't even see Huey Fury currently in the rankings for the WBC, but, you know, a couple of you know, bells and whistles and, you know, no negotiations here and there, maybe able to get him in there in the WBC rankings. And so, you know, they may be able to get this fight, you know, locked in here as the return fight for Deontay Wilder. So, Fury there, you know, young guy, 22 years old, still that stands at 6'6". You know, may potentially be the guy for, you know, for Wilder to return against through his, you know, to come back from his injuries for. So, what's your, you know, initial thoughts about Huey Fury being the being a guy that Wilder could return to fight?
I think after an injury, yeah, Huey Fury is probably the type of guy that Wilder should fight, yes. Because Huey Fury would be a catalyst to fight a better fighter, his cousin. So, yeah, I think Wilder going there, knock him out in 7, maybe even like 4 or 5, but of course, Tyson Fury is going to come in and be like, I got to avenge my cousin. You know, then Wilder go in there and bludgeon Tyson Fury. So, I think after an injury, you know, this is the type of guy that you should fight. Because it has better implications going forward. And he was
right. Yeah. Yeah, Huey Fury is undefeated, but I mean, to me, I kind of feel like it's more of an exhibition fight. I don't I mean, my thing is this. I mean, with Huey Fury, yeah, there may be the potential of Tyson Fury trying to come back and, you know, fight Deontay Wilder. It's just a matter of what is the more lucrative fight for Deontay Wilder at that point. Would it be a returning Tyson Fury, or would it be a fight against Anthony Joshua, especially if it's an Anthony Joshua that defeats a Luis Ortiz or a Joseph Parker or a Vladimir Klitschko? Because if he defeats either Joseph Parker or Vladimir Klitschko, he might have more than one heavyweight championship going into that particular fight if he goes up there against Deontay Wilder, because Parker may most likely have the WBO championship, as you know, that WBO title fight is coming up for Joseph Parker on December 10th. And if the WBO approves for Vladimir Klitschko to hold their title, then Anthony Joshua could fight Vladimir Klitschko in 2017 around the time that Deontay Wilder comes back to fight in March. So, while a Tyson Fury Deontay Wilder fight would be good, especially after what happened at the end of Wilder's fight in January against Artur Spilka, a much more lucrative fight could be against the winner of Anthony Joshua Vladimir Klitschko if that happens, or Anthony Joshua Joseph Parker. So while I see it as a warm-up fight for Deontay Wilder, I think there's, you know, a few more fights that may be out there that may be more lucrative than a Wilder-type Fury fight. And potentially, if not careful, somebody may invoke their mandatory contendership before he tries to go after a Klitschko or a Joshua or a Tyson Fury. So that's something else that Wilder may have to look out for after his return in March. All right, we're pretty much stepping in here in the overtime portion of the show. I don't think there really is that much that is out there. Like I was saying, we're pretty much getting ready for that light heavyweight championship fight between Andre Ward and Sergey Kovalev. Kovalev, my goodness. There also is, you know, the debut of Clarissa Shields on that fight card, that pay-per-view fight card, her first professional fight. So those are able to catch that pay-per-view, be on the lookout for that. You know, later on, like I said, later on in the year, we have a few fight cards going on, especially on December 10th. But before that, also on Thanksgiving weekend, we had that big fight between Nicholas Walters and Lomachenko. So that's something that we're also going to be keeping an eye on to see if Lomachenko could be able to defeat Nicholas Walters. There's been a growing confidence in more people that say that Nicholas Walters may be able to give Lomachenko his second loss. That's something that I also will be, you know, on the lookout for to see how Lomachenko fares against the likes of Nicholas Walters. Is there anything that you're kind of looking out for here in the next few weeks or a month in the sport of boxing?
I mean, of course, the Kovalev and the sport fight, I'm definitely looking out for that. It will tell us who the number one pound for pound is. I'm leaning strong toward Andre Ward. I think Ward's going to make him uncomfortable on the inside. As far as the Lomachenko and Nicholas Walters, speed kills, man. And, you know, Lomachenko is very quick, man. And it just it depends on how relatively quick Nicholas Walters is and how much tougher Nicholas Walters is if he can pretty much bully him. So it's speed. That's the number one thing that'll decide if I lean toward Nicholas Walters. If his speed is in the same realm as Lomachenko, then it'll be a competitive fight. Otherwise, yeah, man, it's gonna be too much speed, man. And I like Nicholas Walters. I would probably go on record and say I would lost his win, but I can't. The boxing analyst in me analyzing what both of them have and not really, you know, just knowing for sure, I have to go with the guy who's speedy and who, in the middle of his speed, thinks and uses certain techniques to dismantle his opponent. Nicholas Walters does it, but he does it at a different speed. He does it at a slower speed. And he pretty much bullies his opponents. But if you can't get to what you know, if they too quick for you to touch them, then what are you going to do? Other than take a few punches to give a few punches, though, but.
Yeah, I think this is a dangerous fight for Lomachenko here. One of it's a guy with the skill level, Nicholas Walters, that has had a lot of, high-scale fights, that he's able to step up and, you know, win there. So this one here is kind of like I was saying, I mean, it may be a fight between those two. I can't, you know, necessarily lean towards anyone here in this fight now. I mean, at first I had, you know, Lomachenko, but I was like looking at it, I'm like, wait a minute, this is, you know, somebody, Nicholas Walters, that, you know, has power behind his punch, that could really catch somebody like a Lomachenko. It's not like, you know, Lomachenko is somebody that's a defensive genius. While he does a lot of things very well, he does have tendencies of getting caught. I really like to see how he's able to go up there against the likes of Nicholas Walters and see how he fares against him. That's pretty much what I'm seeing out of that. There is, you know, a few other, you know, fights coming up here after those. Like I said, December 10th is, you know, packed with a lot of big fights out there. Joshua versus Molina on Showtime. Yeah, Dillian Whyte against Chisora as an undercard for, and that's a WBC eliminator too. So that kind of has a good number of things on the line there. Terrence Crawford is going up against John Molina for Crawford's WBO and WBC belts. You had Jesus Cuellar against Hamna Mahrez and Jamal Charlo against Jimmy and J-Rock Williams on that night. You also have Lil Chavez that's in a super middleweight fight, and you have Joseph Parker and against Andy Ruiz for the WBO Heavyweight Championship. So this is like one of the biggest days in the sport of boxing this year as far as like how many big fights that are out there. So that's going to be something where, you know, people be staying in and watching boxing almost, you know, from, you know, 3 o'clock until 12 o'clock here in the East Coast. And you also had that next week, December 17th, Bernard Hopkins, maybe in the last fight going up against Smith, on HBO in the light heavyweight fight. So that'll be something that we'll keep an eye on as well. Anything else you're looking at here before the end of this year?
I honestly hadn't really looked at all the cards that are supposed to come, but yeah, man, that card is pretty stacked from you describing what's on it. And yeah, that'll be a day that I, like you said, just get my work done during the day and just sit there and watch boxing all evening.
Yeah, man. I mean, actually, it might be like even earlier because on the 7th, because that fight between Joseph Parker and Andy Ruiz will be in New Zealand. So, of course, they're like about 10, you know, 10 to 12 hours ahead of us there. So, I mean, shoot, we might be waking up to see it and finding out who the new WBO heavyweight champion is. And it might be that early. So I'll check the times on those particular fights and see when that one will, you know, start up, and then, you know, pretty much move on from there to the fight card in Manchester, England, and then the fight cards that are in Omaha and Los Angeles. So that's going to be a whole day full of big fights. So on that note, pretty much we'll close out this episode of the show. Be sure to catch the show next week here on Sunday on 7:30 and catch our sister shows with the Cold Truth on Sports Tuesday nights at 8:30 p.m. with the Executioner Matthew Maul and the CMT Foreign Star Football Talk Show Wednesday night at 8:30 p.m. with our with their host Calvin Mike. And like I say at the end of every show, point of boxing is to hit and not get hit, not to send and trade. On that note, I'm out. Have a good one.